Okay.
Good afternoon. I'm opening a meeting of the House Energy and Environment Committee for Tuesday, February 10th, 2015. Welcome, everyone. Today, we are going to have an informational hearing and then a couple of public hearings, which we have several people signed up to testify on those bills. Before we get started, though, I just had a couple of announcements. Representative Holby is excused today. He has got the flu or bug or whatever that's going around the Capitol. Welcome to session. And we do have something, Representative Benz, some responses to the questions that you had for PUC that are, those have been sent out to everyone, but they're also posted on OLIS for you to review. There's a couple of other responses still pending in regards to the cost calculations, but they'll be getting those to us soon. Yeah. And then finally, as I mentioned before, we're going to try to go paperless as much as possible for this committee. So all of the material that's posted for the committee will be up by 11:30, and there'll be Beth will send out an email to your staff to let you know when those are posted. Anything that comes in after 11:30 will have paper copies available at the dais, so you'll have a chance in case you didn't get to take a look at those. If any of you guys have any questions about that or want to talk to Beth about alternative arrangements, feel free to do that. Okay, any questions? Okay. Then I'm going to go ahead and open an informational hearing on energy development services, incentives, grants, and loan overview. For this, I would like to call up Mike Kaplan, Executive Director of the Oregon Department of Energy, and Anthony Buckley from the Oregon Department of Energy. Welcome. And the presentation for this is available on OLIS.
Good afternoon, Chair Vega Peterson, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Michael Kaplan, Director of the Oregon Department of Energy. Thank you for the opportunity and invitation to speak today. Our CFO, Anthony Buckley, will be giving the lion's share of today's testimony, but I did want to briefly touch on a few high-level thoughts about Energy Development Services, the division within the Department of Energy that offers our incentive and loans, and the two bills that you'll be hearing about shortly. The Department of Energy is working hard to ensure that the public resources we provide are done so responsibly and as carefully as possible. Currently, that means reviewing how we've administered these programs in the past, evaluating what worked, and more importantly, evaluating what didn't work to ensure our constant improvement. Our programs are stronger now, but we recognize there is still an opportunity to get better. The constructive criticism we have received in the past is being implemented. We're simultaneously working to address fundamental ways to make our programs stronger and run more smoothly, and finding common sense solutions and fixes that we can implement on our own or with your collaboration. We very much appreciate your partnership and patience throughout this process and look forward to the future. With that, I'd like to turn it over to Anthony. Thank you.
Thank you. Excuse me. Chair Vega Peterson, Vice Chair Johnson, Vice Chair Reardon, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Anthony Buckley, and I'm the Chief Financial Officer for the Oregon Department of Energy. I'm here before you today to present an overview of the Oregon Department of Energy's Energy Development Services Division. There are two sections in the Energy Development Services Division, the State Energy Loan Program, also known as the SELP, and the Energy Incentives Program, which we call the EIP. The focus of the State Energy Loan Program is to provide an alternative financing resource for project owners. The focus of the Energy Incentives Program is to influence a change in behavior or the adoption of technologies that mitigate energy consumption or produce alternative fuels, lessening demand for depleting fossil fuels. Overall, the Energy Development Services Division encourages investments in viable energy projects, whether those are conservation, energy efficiency, or renewable energy resources through loans, tax credits, rebates, and grants. EDS, Energy Development Services, uses the expertise of department staff and stakeholder input to develop rules and guidelines for the loan and incentive programs. The EDS programs support the goals of Oregon's 10-year Energy Action Plan. The State Energy Loan Program, also known as SELP, as I stated before, serves individuals, businesses, nonprofit organizations, schools, and local, state, federal, and tribal governments. SELP consists of three areas: the SELP Fund, the Clean Energy Deployment Fund, and the Alternative Fuel Vehicle Revolving Fund. I want to first talk about the SELP Fund. Excuse me. The SELF Fund provides loans for conservation, renewable, and other energy projects. SELF was created by the Oregon Legislature in 1979. In 1980, Oregon voters approved an amendment to the Oregon Constitution authorizing the sale of general obligation bonds to finance small-scale local energy projects. SELF made its first loan in 1981. Recent borrowers have included Vernonia School District, to whom we provided a loan for about $1.2 million, the Lowell School District, where we provided about $900,000 in loan funds, and Lane County, where we loaned $2.08 million. Through 2014, SELF has dispersed 874 loans totaling close to $612 million. There are currently 180 loans open with an outstanding balance of around $214 million. That's over the 30-year history of the program, 30-plus years, sorry. SELF loan amounts range from $20,000 to $20 million is the largest loan we've done to date. Loans are funded primarily through the sale of general obligation bonds. We do require collateral, and flexible terms generally range from, our terms will range from 5 to 20 years, but it really is based on the life expectancy of the equipment being financed. Interest rates are market driven, but for SELP, it's different than a commercial bank. They depend on when we go to the bond market and what the prevailing rates are in the bond market that we experience. An advisory, also known as the SELPAC, the Small Scale Energy Loan Advisory Committee, approves all loans over $100,000. This is a citizen committee with members represented or appointed by the director of the department. The Clean Energy Deployment Fund is a segment of SELP with a special focus on providing grants and loans to support energy efficiency for clean energy projects in Oregon. The fund was created in 2011 under House Bill 2960. Loans from this fund may be provided to public schools to weatherize, upgrade, and retrofit or replace school bus fleets. Loans have gone to a number of school districts as part of the Cool Schools pilot project. The initiative's goal is to install cost-saving energy measures and controls that allow students to be cool in the summer and warm in the winter, thereby improving their learning environment. The resultant energy savings from installed measures reduce the overall cost of the improvements to the school districts. Additionally, the fund supports programs that provide loans to residential properties for energy efficiency projects under the Energy Efficiency and Sustainable Technology Loan Program, established back with 2007 legislation. The Alternative Fuel Vehicle Revolving Fund was created in 2013 under Senate Bill 583. It was then expanded in 2014 under House Bill 4107. This program provides loans to local, state, and tribal governments and private entities in the Portland Vehicle Inspection Area and Medford-Ashland Air Quality Maintenance Area. The fund assists in the purchase of new alternative fuel vehicles and helps convert existing gasoline or diesel vehicles to alternative fuels. The fund was seeded by the auction of $3 million in transportation tax credits. The department publishes funding opportunity announcements with the program's requirements and application timeframes. The fund currently has $3 million available for projects. We just opened the opportunity announcement at the beginning of this year and are accepting applications. The Energy Incentives Program provides tax credits, grants, and rebates to Oregon homeowners and businesses for energy conservation, renewable energy, transportation, and biomass projects. The oldest of the incentives program is the Residential Energy Tax Credit Program, created by legislation in 1977, and the newest is the Alternative Fuel Vehicle Fleet Tax Credit, created by legislation in 2013. We started accepting applications again for the alternative fuel vehicle fleet tax credits at the beginning of this year. The chart on the wall gives you a breakdown or an idea of how these programs are broken down and under which umbrella they fall. The 8 sections of the incentive programs are shown in this chart. The residential tax credit and SHOW rebate are ongoing programs where the department receives applications throughout the year. On the business side, the biomass tax credit is an ongoing, uncapped program. Applications for transportation tax credits and conservation projects under $20,000 in cost are accepted during certain periods of time on a first-come, first-served basis. the General Energy Conservation Project Tax Credit, and the Renewable Energy Development Grant projects are competitively reviewed based on available funding. The Residential Energy Tax Credit Program promotes energy conservation and renewable energy resource development by providing a wide range of personal income tax credit incentives to homeowners, renters, and landlords to modify or purchase energy efficient equipment and renewable energy systems. This program has been in use since 1978. The department has issued over 570,000 tax credits, totaling approximately $172 million for eligible projects during that time. The program has saved or displaced enough energy in Oregon to power about 400,000 households for 1 year. RETC is uncapped, with the exception of third-party solar PV systems that are limited to $10 million in tax credit per tax year. Tax credit amounts vary based on the alternative energy device and the amount of energy saved or produced. Department staff engage with stakeholders, and on an annual basis, we engage and discuss program operation and review energy savings that are used to calculate tax credit amounts. The RETC program continues to be very popular. As a result, its success contributes to meeting our state energy efficiency and renewable energy goals. On the agenda today, the department is introducing House Bill 2447. This bill would modify the Residential Energy Tax Credit Program. The bill extends the program's sunset, places an incentive cap of 50% of costs, and provides the department with rulemaking authority to lower incentives based on market conditions. The RETC statute divides eligible devices into two categories. Category one, for the most part, are energy conservation type projects, and category two are renewable energy production and fuel cell projects. Category one projects, for the most part, receive a tax credit of 60 cents per first year energy savings, capped at $1,500, or the cost of the device, whichever is lower. Category two devices receive an amount per first year energy savings, or watts, up to 50% of the device cost, or $6,000, whichever is lower. For solar PV and fuel cell systems, the department, through rulemaking, may lower the incentive provided per watt based on market conditions. House Bill 2447, places additional limits on Category 1 devices, including rulemaking authority to lower incentive rates by device, similar to the authority currently provided for solar PV and fuel cell systems. Since 1981, the Oregon Department of Energy has administered the State Home Oil Weatherization, or the SHOW program. This program serves Oregon households that heat with oil, propane, kerosene, butane, or wood. About 100,000 Oregon homes are heated with oil or propane. Most of them were built before energy standards were part of the building codes and are often in need of weatherization and heating measures. SHOW eligible homeowners can conduct their own energy audit and apply for rebates of up to $500 for installed weatherization and heating measures. Households at or below eligibility levels for the U.S. Department of Energy's low-income weatherization program can apply for SHOW rebates through community action agencies serving low-income households. Cash payments for these households are up to $2,500 per household, subject to availability of funds, and are on a first-come, first-served basis. The program mostly receives applications for insulation, programmable thermostats, and replacement windows. Funding for SHOW comes from petroleum supplier companies doing business in Oregon through an assessment. Oregon statute limits that assessment to $400,000 per year. Renewable energy development grants, or as we call them in the department, RED, are for Oregon businesses installing renewable energy production systems at a business or residential rental property in Oregon. RED grants are awarded through a competitive selection process. RED grants are 35% of eligible costs, up to a maximum of $250,000 per project. Eligible projects include systems that use biomass, solar, geothermal, hydroelectric, wind, landfill gas, biogas, or wave, tidal or ocean thermal energy technology to produce energy. Solar technology is limited to systems that use solar radiation to generate electric energy. The Oregon Department of Revenue auctions one-year tax credits to fund the grant program. Up to $1.5 million each fiscal year is auctioned off. The tax credits are sold in $500 increments, with the lowest bid accepted set at $475. On the agenda today, the department was also introducing House Bill 2448, which would extend the sunset for renewable energy development grants by 4 years. The Renewable Energy Development Grant Program has 5 complete and about 18 active projects throughout the state. The majority of the 23 active and complete RED grant projects have been for solar PV, as shown by the yellow diamonds on the map on the wall. The inserted pie chart in the bottom right-hand corner shows the total grants awarded and pending by project type. The Energy Conservation Tax Credit is for Oregon businesses making capital investments in which the first-year energy savings yield a simple payback period of greater than 3 years. Conservation projects are capped at $28 million per biennium. The department divides the available funding among various opportunity announcements. And don't worry, I'll explain all the gibberish on the screen. Competitively selected energy conservation projects include the following categories: building envelope, combined heat and power, commercial thermal, commercial building systems, and sustainable construction. Applicants submit a preliminary application, which is competitively reviewed and ranked. The top-ranked projects are selected for a technical review prior to issuing a preliminary certificate. Once the project is complete, the applicant submits a final application with an on-site inspection required. Upon approval, the department issues a tax credit of up to 35% of the project cost. Project examples include a lighting and chiller upgrade at the Sky Lakes Medical Center in Klamath Falls, a process improvement project at the Reeser Fine Foods facility in Salem, and a Willamette Valley Vineyard solar thermal water heating project in Turner. Those type of projects are the projects that you see in the left-hand box on the screen. Non-competitive small premium projects are conservation projects with cost under $20,000. These projects are exempt from the preliminary certification requirements and instead complete an informal filing to reserve the tax credit. The eligible types are listed on the slide on the right-hand side. Once the project is complete, the applicant submits a final application with possible on-site inspection being required. Upon approval, the department issues a prescriptive tax credit of up to $7,000. On the agenda today, I also note the department is introducing, again, House Bill 2448. This bill would extend the sunset date for the energy conservation tax credits and provide that conservation projects with $1 million or more in project cost annually recertify the tax credit to ensure greater tax credit accountability for larger projects. Since the start of the program, the energy conservation tax credit has seen about 770 complete and active projects in Oregon. The gray circles on the map on the screen represent 676 active or complete small premium projects. Remember, those are those projects with less than $20,000 in project cost. The rest of the dots show 94 active and complete, competitively selected conservation projects. The transportation tax credit is capped at $20 million per biennium. It's split between 3 areas: alternative fuel vehicle infrastructure, alternative fuel vehicle fleets, which just started at the beginning of 2015, and transit service, which are in their last year of eligibility. You'll recall earlier that I stated during the 2013-15 biennium, $3 million of available tax credits under this program were auctioned by the Department of Revenue to seed an alternative vehicle revolving fund. On the agenda today, the department again is introducing House Bill 2448 that would extend the sunset date for alternative fuel vehicle infrastructure and fleet tax credits by 4 years. The main focus of the transportation tax credit going forward is infrastructure and fleet projects. Alternative fuel vehicle projects are reviewed on a first-come, first-served basis. The projects are awarded 5-year tax credits up to 35% of eligible project cost. Alternative fuel infrastructure tax credits are for projects that install or construct a facility for mixing, storing, compressing, or dispensing fuels for alternative fuel vehicles. This includes electric charging, compressed natural gas, and propane fueling stations. Alternative fuel fleet tax credits are projects that purchase or replace or modify two or more vehicles to use an alternative fuel and that produce lower exhaust emissions or are more energy efficient than equivalent vehicles fueled by gasoline or diesel. The fleet tax credit, again, just started accepting applications at the beginning of this year. Since 2012, the Energy Incentives Program Alternative Fuel Vehicle Infrastructure offering has provided a tax credit to those projects for about 37 complete or active alternative fuel vehicle infrastructure projects mostly along the I-5 corridor. Since 2010, the Oregon Department of Energy has undertaken a more rigorous review of tax credit and grant projects through a compliance program to inspect and review projects. Staff confirmed that the project complies with conditions stated on the preliminary certification through on-site inspections. The department prioritizes inspections of larger projects. The department has started to expand the use of inspections across other programs within the agency. This includes RETSI, the Residential Energy Tax Credit Program, schools, and siting project inspections. The biomass producer or collector tax credit was created in 2007 under House Bill 2210, and in 2009, the responsibility to administer the program was moved from the Oregon Department of Revenue to the Oregon Department of Energy. To be eligible for this tax credit, an applicant must be an agricultural producer or biomass collector, and biomass material must be produced from within Oregon. In addition, the biomass must be used as biofuel or to produce biofuel in Oregon. Only Oregon income taxpayers are eligible. This incentive is available for eligible activities occurring in tax years prior to January 1st, 2018. In 2013, the department certified $5.7 million in tax credits for biomass. The majority were for manures, for the manure sector of the program. In closing, I'm going to talk about the opportunities before us with this, with the department's energy incentives and loan programs. Specifically, the SELP program is an agency priority. Curing its forecasted deficit and mitigating any potential impacts of the general fund are of paramount importance to my team, to the management, to this state. We've increased our marketing efforts to attract more stable borrowers, stronger borrowers, and we strengthened the underwriting criteria within the program. In our marketing efforts, we are focusing not only on private sector opportunities, but also an increased focus on governmental entities to ensure they see SELP as a valued resource. The program's strengthened underwriting criteria requires greater collateral positions for the department and takes a more conservative approach to the valuation of that collateral. Under the EIP, we support the passage of House Bills 2447 and 2448. 2447 modifies the Residential Energy Tax Credit Program by extending the program sunset, placing limits on incentive awards, and enhanced rulemaking authority that would allow the department an ability to better react to changing market conditions. House Bill 2448 also extends the sunset date for incentives offered through the Energy Incentives Program. The bill would also ensure greater accountability by authorizing usage of performance agreements on all projects and require annual recertification of tax credits where eligible project costs are greater than $1 million. Thank you for your time. And with that, I take any questions you may have.
Thank you so much. Representative Benz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And could we go back up to the slide that shows the Renewable Energy Development Grant, complete and active projects, right there. And I actually have two questions, but the first, I just want to note that there, I see that a use has been found for my district. It's a dumping ground for pie charts.
Very good.
And just if we just kind of walk through each one of these, you'll notice. Go ahead, another two. Just go ahead, another two slides. One more. There we go. Yeah. And one more. Go a couple more.
Look at all those things in your district.
Yeah, go a couple more. One more. There we go. Yeah, right there.
Covered up by.
So now if you could go back to the one we started with. Yeah, right there. Now, Neal Hot Springs is covered up by the pie chart, but it is a 36 or 38 megawatt geothermal plant. I'm just curious if it was, if it participated in this. I don't think it did, but I'm just curious. Did it? Do we know? Neil Hot Springs, U.S. Geothermal?
Chair Vega Pedersen, Representative Benz. I can follow up with you on that. I'm not sure at this time.
It was. I mentioned it because it's kind of a big deal in our area. It's hugely successful. There was a $90 million loan from the Department of Energy that allowed it to get going. I think the total cost of the project is around $140 million. It employs, I think, 30 or 40 people. And they are going to put in, I think, two more. So it's the kind of thing that I would hope our involvement promotes. So I'd just like to mention that, Madam Chair. And then the next one, there's a, if I could, if I have another question, thank you. I think it's the transportation. Yes, here it is. If you go down to the alternative fuel vehicle projects tax credit, back one. My question is this, and forgive me for forgetting, but we at one time had the numbers on the actual amount of the tax credit that made its way to the project. And for the new members of the committee, it would be really helpful if, when we call out the use of these tax credits, we also call out how much money is actually making its way to the on-ground project. There's usually a percentage that we could use, because it's sometimes confusing when we don't see the exact amount of our tax dollars that are making their way to these projects. And I think it'd be a really great measure for all of us to see what actually happens with these too broadly referred to devices called tax credits. So for my purposes, it would be great if you could supply us with that information on each one of the slides that we've seen, because that number should be readily available.
Chair Vega Pedersen, Representative Benz. I think that's a great question, and we will follow up with more detail on the slides and the characteristics of the credits and how they reach the project.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Reardon.
And I should probably know that you have various loan programs, correct? And so what is it about the terms that make your loan program so attractive to compared to, say, commercial?
Certainly. Chair Vega Pedersen, Representative Reardon. One of the benefits to the SELP program, one I want to stipulate, we don't try and compete with the commercial bank market. One of the benefits of the SELP loan program is we're able to borrow at tax-exempt rates for publicly qualified projects. So what that equates to is a cost savings that's passed along to the borrowers. Commercial rates will tend to be higher. One of the other distinguishing factors is our in-house expertise. Typically, commercial banks don't have a focus on energy. We have staff who do focus, and we rely on to help evaluate and underwrite projects.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You mentioned some of your grants are actually competitively awarded. Is that correct?
Tell
me about the process that goes into determining who gets the grant and who does not.
Chair Vega Pedersen, Vice Chair Johnson. So now you're challenging my technical expertise. I'm a finance guy. As I said, with renewable grants, we typically, in collaboration with the Department of Revenue, auction off about $1.5 million a year. Mm-hmm. We then do an opportunity or call for projects. Project owners submit their application. They describe their project, the benefits and the outputs that those projects will produce. We then rank them amongst each other, and we prioritize them. Again, it's a 35% tax credit up to $250,000. So presumably, $1.5 million would cover six projects. It depends on the size of the project, what they're asking for, but it's competitively ranked based on what the project owner tells us.
Follow up. On the slide about alternative fuel vehicle projects, that tax credit, you mentioned fleet projects, including at least two alternative vehicles and so forth. Have you been approached by, or are you approached by, school districts or other larger entities like that that might have a fleet full of buses and so forth? And is there anyone who has taken advantage of this to shift their, let's say, the preponderance of their transportation program to alternative vehicles?
Chair Vega Pedersen, Vice Chair Johnson. As I noted earlier in the presentation, we just opened those programs at the beginning of the year under the incentive programs. I checked with staff before I came. We have four active applications. I don't know who the applicants are. Under our loan program, there is a lot of discussion with all of the groups that I talked about before, private entities, school districts, various entities throughout the state. We haven't executed yet, but there is interest in the opportunity announcements are out there.
Well, one follow-up.
But
that would be great. But you know, especially regarding education transportation, you know, another partner could be ODE, because they're actually reimbursed 70% of the transportation costs at the district. So if you can quantify some savings, it actually would save the department some revenue or money as well. So you might just partner with them on some of those conversations.
Okay. Further questions? I just had a couple of questions. So for the SHOW program, it sounds like that's a relatively small program based on the number of, what you said, about 100,000 folks in the state that have oil heating. Is that correct?
Chair Vega-Pedersen, that is correct.
Yeah. How many people participate in that program per year? Do you have an idea?
Chair Pedersen, at this time, I don't have those numbers at hand. I can get back to you on it.
Okay. That would be great. And then kind of the same thing for the RED. You know, there was up to $1.5 million per fiscal year. Do we reach that amount? You know, that's what's eligible, but I'm just curious, how close do we get to that, or do they sell out?
Chair Vega-Pedersen, excellent question. I believe we're in our third iteration of RED grants. It really depends on the buyer's appetite in the auction. Whatever Department of Revenue is successful in selling, and they have, the first auction didn't go so well. Second auction met the threshold, the $1.5 million, and then subsequently we've seen a demand for those credits, and we make the full $1.5 million available.
Okay, thank you so much for your time today. I am going to go ahead and close the informational meeting on Energy Development Services, and I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2447. Before we have the first panel come up, I'm going to invite Chris Olenek from the Legislative Revenue Office to come and talk a little bit about the tax credits. So for those of you who are new to the committee, with tax credits, when they're up for renewal or we have a tax credit bill, they're considered in a policy committee first, and then they have a subsequent referral to the revenue committee. And so Chris discovered that there are other hearing rooms outside of hearing room A where the revenue committee meets, and he's going to just talk a little bit about things that need to be considered when you're looking at tax credits at a policy committee, because there are certain standard or there are certain questions that we need to answer for the tax credits committee as they're deciding how much money to allot to them. So thank you so much for being here.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Chris Olenek, Legislative Revenue Office. I can tell if you're getting to more hearing rooms. I think this will be the second time that people have heard this little spiel, some of the members of the committee. But just touching on that overall process, there was from 2013, there was House Bill 2002, which required a report to be produced by LRO on the tax credits, and we released that to the revenue committees last week, and that's, I don't know if it's in OLIS for this committee, it's in OLIS for the revenue committee, it's also on our publications page.
No.
And that report focuses on the 18 tax credits that are scheduled for a sunset this biennium. All of the tax credits that the state has, or just about all of them, have a sunset date, and there's a cycle of them. There are three groups, so a third of them sunset this biennium, and a third more will sunset in 2 years, and then another third will sunset two years after that. So this tax credit report that we have provides some basic information on the tax credits and gets at a policy purpose for those tax credits. And keeping in line with that notion of the tax credits at sunset, there will be other tax credits like the two that were mentioned this morning or today that, depending on what the committee chooses to do, will get passed on to the Joint Tax Credit Committee and will be wrapped into that process. And within this report, there is an appendix that has a number of questions that hopefully the policy committees will be able to discuss and try to kind of get at some answer, with the ultimate goal being as clear a statement as possible what the goal or the policy intent is of a given tax credit. The legislature over recent sessions has expressed a desire to really get at an evaluation of whether or not these tax credits are doing what they are intended to do. And the first step in that process is a clear, or at least as clear as possible, policy intent or goal or purpose statement. And as we found out through the tax expenditure report, which has been out for a number of years, and this report, I went back to the implementing legislation for the tax credits, and quite often there is no policy purpose or legislative intent in statute as to what the goal of the credit was. So that's one of the high level hopes for the policy committees, is to what is it supposed to do? And then on the budget side, that likely will fall on the Joint Committee on Tax Credits. They were given an amount to spend on tax credits, and however that plays out will be between the revenue chairs and I guess the Ways and Means co-chairs. So within that, part of the hope within the policy committees is some sort of tiered structure or prioritization of what the credits could be in the policy implementation. And one of the things that's new this session is LRO staff time to help the policy committees provide preliminary revenue impacts and work with the committees on the potential cost of changes to the policies for the tax credits. And so that's a very quick, high-level synopsis of the tax credit review process.
Questions? Representative Benz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chris, I know I've asked this question before, I get to ask it again in Tax Credits Committee, but do we have any general guess at the volume of tax credits out there? Nothing exact. But the reason I ask is because the degree of specificity that we're applying to the expenditures of tax credits leads me to believe that that type of careful viewing should happen in many different places. I just want to know how much we're spending in that area, and then at some point see if we can compare measures of quality and character of review.
Chair Vega Peterson, Representative Benz, I'm looking at that tax credit report, and within there, from the 15-17 tax expenditure report, total Oregon credits are $1.68 billion. Mm-hmm. Now, about $1.2 billion of that is one tax credit. That's the personal exemption credit. And for those folks not on the revenue committee, that's each taxpayer is allowed a credit of, it's about $200 now on the tax return. So of that 1.6, 1.2 is that one credit itself. So all of the other credits are in the $300 to $400 million range. Now, summing them up, some of those credits are already scheduled for already have sunsetted, and we are working through carry forwards on those.
Follow up, Madam Chair.
Follow up.
Is that an annual number or a biennial number?
That was a biennial.
Biennial. And so, follow up. The 1.2 is 600,000 a year then for the personal exemption. 600 million, excuse me.
Yes.
Follow up. So if we took the 1.2 billion away from the 1.68, the amount that remains is for 1 year, but we would have to carry it forward because we've already committed that number for a period of time, but different periods of time depending upon sunsets. Is that a correct statement?
Yes, Chair Vega Peterson, Representative Benz. It can get a little bit complicated in terms of the timing element, because some credits are structured so that they're multiple year credits, and some of them are 1 year credits, and then some of them have carry forwards. So trying to get depending on what you're trying to get at with that cost, there are a lot of layers to what those true costs are.
Right. And final question, the question I asked earlier was, how much of the tax credit dollar actually makes its way to the goal we're trying to achieve? And it varies. I'm guessing, dramatically. But can you give us a general statement? Maybe you can pick out a few and say what the percentage of money actually reaching the ground is in some of these different programs, or are they so program-specific we'd have to go look at each one?
Representative Benz, I think they're very program-specific. Some of these are, like whether they're the RETC or the conservation tax credits, are really lend themselves to going to kind of a third party. Some of the tax credits go directly to the intended party, and some of them go to somebody else. Mm-hmm. You have tax credits that are sold on the open market, if you will, and those go to one set of people, not really the beneficiaries of the policy that is intended to be paid for with the tax credits. So that's a very convoluted and complicated way to say I don't know.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, I lied. I need to ask one more question.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Is there a way that we on this committee can, when we're talking any particular tax credit, find out what the degree of efficiency is in the tax credit dollar moving toward the goal we're trying to achieve? Mm-hmm. Can we ask for some sort of a rating A, B, C, or 50% effective, 20%? What can we use as a common descriptive phrase that gets us to the effectiveness of the tax credit device?
I think moving toward that is one of the reasons I'm here, is to try and get the committee closer to answer those kinds of questions. So I'm here to work with the committee to see how close to an answer we can get on that kind of question.
I'm very happy for that. Thank you.
Chris, I have a couple of questions. So has there been any discussion within LRO or with the committee administration on how you want to have these questions answered from policy committees?
Madam Chair, not in a formal sense. I have been talking with committee services, and each committee has its own culture, if you will, and then the tax credits vary. Mm-hmm. So there isn't necessarily one best way to answer that question. So I think we can just, we're kind of figuring it out as we go in terms of the best. It depends on the questions that the committee wants answered about the policy. Depends on if there are a lot of policy changes that the committee would like. And a lot of it might just be setting up questions. One of the universal things is a lack of quality data to evaluate these. But that's almost secondary to the policy purpose, getting back at what I was saying before. As much clarity around the intent would be helpful. And then within that intent, whatever can be done to direct state agencies or stakeholders to collect information, or however that plays out, so that for the eventual evaluation of the tax credits. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the overarching theme, and I think it's almost easier to think about that end game rather than kind of going through the checklist of the questions, because the questions that are there, they're the ones that have been handed out in the 11th session and in the 13th session. Those were produced by LRO, but they were mainly suggestive in nature. It wasn't a comprehensive list, or these are the only questions to be asked and answered. Mm-hmm. It was really just ways to get the conversation going, because that's one of the questions we get from members as well. How do we go about doing this? What information do you need? How do we think about this? And those kinds of things. So it's really to get the conversation going, and that's often the trickiest part.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I mean, some of these I think are going to be, as a policy committee, we'll be able to provide some information on others. I think that it might be working through the agency or, you know, LRO, you know, doing maybe research, but this is good. So thank you so much. If there aren't any other questions, the only thing that I would say, committee, is that on we don't have the tax credit report that Chris created on the meeting materials for today, but it is on the February 3rd meeting materials of the House Revenue Committee. It'll be the fifth exhibit in there if you want to take a look for some fun, enjoyable reading. So thank you so much.
Did you say today's?
February 3rd. February 3rd. Yeah, for the House Revenue. Okay. Thank you so much.
Sure.
All right. So thanks, Chris, for that. And then I'm going to go ahead and I already opened the public hearing. So, Beth, why don't we go ahead and get started with House Bill 2447. And can you provide the committee with a description of the bill?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2447 would extend the sunset for the tax credit for alternative energy devices from January 1, 2018 to January 1, 2022. It would also authorize the Department of Energy to adopt rules providing for lesser amounts of incentives for each type of device as market conditions warrant. We do not yet have any fiscal revenue impact statements for this bill, and there is a subsequent referral to the Revenue Committee.
Okay. And we have 18 people signed up to testify on this bill. So I'm going to go ahead and ask the department to come back up to give a little more detailed information. And although you were here a little earlier, please go ahead and state your name for the record when you come back up.
Chair Vega Peterson, members of the committee, Michael Kaplan, Director, Oregon Department of Energy.
Chair Vega Peterson, members of the committee, Anthony Buffy, Chief Financial Officer for the Oregon Department of Energy. Chair Vega Peterson, members of the committee, I'm here today to testify on House Bill 2447. Thank you for the opportunity to provide you an overview of this bill. And please note, also included in your packet is a chart outlining characteristics of the RED-C program and the proposed legislation. Also included, you'll find a list of updates and technical adjustments this bill would enact. I'll cover this towards the end of my presentation. The RED-C program provides a wide range of tax incentives to homeowners, renters, and landlords to modify or purchase energy-efficient equipment and renewable energy systems. RED-C has been in use since 1978, issuing over 570,000 tax credits, totaling approximately $172 million. Over the past 36 years, RED-C has saved or displaced enough energy to power approximately 400,000 Oregon households for 1 year. House Bill 2447 modifies the state's residential energy tax credit program by extending the program sunset. It creates a 50% cost cap and provides the department rulemaking authority to adjust incentives based on market conditions. RED-C incentives are available to Oregon homeowners or tenants for a wide variety of residential energy products, such as gas appliances, heat pump water heaters, wooden pellet stoves, heat pumps, and duct sealing. RED-C also provides tax credits for solar water heating, charging stations, and solar PV systems. These and other eligible devices are listed on the attached chart. If you refer to that chart, the green section shows a number of incentives provided in tax year 2013. The blue colored section shows the current tax credit rates for 2015. And the yellow section shows the changes provided for in 2447. Tax credit amounts vary based on the energy device and the amount of energy saved or produced. An eligible device is limited by first-year energy savings or energy produced and an overall dollar cap of $1,500 for most devices and $6,000 for solar PV and fuel systems. Applicants cannot receive an incentive for more than the cost of the eligible project. Department staff engage regularly with our stakeholders to discuss program operation and review those factors used to calculate tax credit amounts. In 2011, House Bill 3672 provided the department authority to adjust the rate for solar PV and fuel cell systems based on market conditions. Over the last 3 years, the department has met with stakeholders, and as a result of these meetings and an analysis of the market, the solar PV incentive rate has been reduced twice. The RED-C solar PV rate will continue to be evaluated on an annual basis with the goal of making frequent small adjustments in a collaborative manner to minimize negative impacts to the market. House Bill 3672 also removed eligibility for certain household appliances, and it removed the specific tax credit amount for other eligible energy-efficient appliances. This change resulted in a 50% increase in an incentive rate that was set at 40 cents per kilowatt hour and a $500 increase in the overall cap that had previously been $1,000. The change in statute also removed a tax credit limit of 25% of the cost of the device. House Bill 2447 modifies the RED-C program by extending the program's sunset, and again, it places a 50% cost cap on eligible devices and expands rulemaking authority to adjust incentive amounts when necessary. So when we talk about extending the sunset, the extension of the sunset would provide eligible participants income tax credits for an additional 4 years. RETC would continue to incentivize the purchase of eligible energy devices, and other utility programs would continue to be able to leverage the RETC offerings with their own incentive offerings. The bill places, as I mentioned, a 50% cost cap for all Category 1 energy alternative devices, including appliances. The bill would align Category 1 and Category 2 device incentives. Most RETC applicants receive less than 50% of their eligible costs. Approximately 10% of the 11,400 Category 1 tax credits issued in 2013 were for more than 50% of the device costs. By adding a 50% cost cap for Category 1 devices, House Bill 2447 would provide one of several methods to limit the amount of a tax credit. In 2011, House Bill 3672 gave the department statutory authority to adjust the rate for solar PV and fuel cell systems based on market conditions. House Bill 2447 extends that authority to all RETC devices and clarifies the department's general rulemaking authority for program operations. Most RETC devices receive the same tax credit despite their cost varying widely. The requested rulemaking authority would provide flexibility for the department to adjust tax credit rates as market conditions warrant, including energy savings, price of the device, and other available incentives. Any rate adjustments would be implemented through a public rulemaking process. House Bill 2447 provides an alternative fuel device tax credit of $750. Currently, alternative fuel devices receive 25% of the cost of the device not to exceed a credit of 25% of the cost of the device not to exceed $750. We are also requesting an amendment for an alternative fuel devices to receive the lesser of 50% of the cost of the device or $750, similar to other Category 1 devices. This provision was inadvertently left out of the original bill. As I mentioned in my introduction, House Bill 2447 also provides an opportunity to update and clarify RETC program operations. These items are listed on the handout provided in your packet, but please allow me to highlight just a few. House Bill 2447 repeals several outdated statutes. In several sections, the bill adds the ability to allow the department to also consider state and federal appliance standards when determining eligibility for RETC devices. The definition of cost has changed to reflect the current program practice that eligible costs may include the acquisition, construction, and installation of devices. These are just a few of the programmatic changes that the bill would enact. In your handout is a list of others. In summary, House Bill 2447 extends the existing sunset for the program from January 1st, 2018 to January 1st, 2022. The bill places an incentive cap of 50% of the eligible cost on all Category 1 alternative energy devices. Lastly, the bill provides the department with general rulemaking and expanded rulemaking authority to adjust the residential energy tax credit incentive by device based on market conditions. The Oregon Department of Energy asks for your support on House Bill 2447. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel? Okay. Thank you so much. Excuse me, Representative Reardon.
I really encourage as many installations of these devices as possible, but I just had one question. Can these tax credits be used in conjunction with any other publicly funded incentives?
Representative Vega, Vice Chair Reardon, one of the goals that we strive to do is not over-incentivize. So certain portions, if the credit is capped, if for those funds that a purchaser is coming out of pocket for, there's no absolution where they can't get another credit for that uncovered portion. It can be, I apologize, let me back up. Credits can be combined with other incentives available, not other incentives offered by the department.
Could you tell me what those other incentives might be?
Representative Chair Vega Peterson, Representative Reardon, it depends on the project. You may have some federal incentives available. Utilities offer incentives, and typically the goal between these, combining these incentives, is to bring down the overall cost of the installation of a new technology or an advanced technology.
We'll stop there. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, thank you so much. So, like I said, we have several people signed up to speak about this program. I'm going to go ahead and call you up in order, but if there's certain folks that you want to have testify with you as a group, you can arrange that way. So I'm going to start off with Laura Euler, Mark Farrell, and Jeff Bissonette. First three people to sign up. Welcome. And just as a reminder, please state your name for the record. Just state your name for the record before you begin.
Hello, I'm Laura Euler. Thank you very much for allowing this testimony. My name is Laura Euler. I am the owner of Solar Key. I'm a solar electric and design and installation company that works out of the central Lamet Valley and into the coast. And my background is that of an engineer and an engineering manager. I worked in the high-tech semiconductor area for over 25 years here in Oregon before starting my solar company 8 years ago. And I just want to provide some testimony as to some of the benefits I definitely see coming from the RETC. So first, it does provide good local jobs. My business model is such that I partner with a local union electrical company to provide electricians to do my installations, and I work with a green building company to do the skilled construction portion of the work that I do. And certainly when the industry, the housing industry, was really in a bad state a few years ago, they were thrilled to be able to have good solar jobs to be able to do, and they're, you know, now that things have improved, they're still quite pleased to be able to work in solar jobs as well. Over the years, I've hired about a half a dozen people working directly for Solar Key, in addition to the partners I have. And as well, you know, I work with a local accounting firm that does my payroll and taxes, and I work with local, you know, graphics design company that does my signs and engraves my plaques, and I work with local distributors as much as possible to provide equipment, and I often buy Solar World panels, which are produced right here in Oregon as well. So the local dollars that go into the solar installations are just recirculated into money into the local communities as well. And the second advantages I see is PV is certainly a use of a good sound technology to provide a really good environmental benefit for us. PV is, as I said, it's a really good, solid, old technology that is something that provides clean, renewable power for 40 or 50 or more years. The solar panels that were set up in the 60s are still producing power now, and it's a infrastructure upgrade to a homeowner's existing electrical system. So we're using the existing electrical infrastructure in order to upgrade it, in order to provide clean, renewable power that really benefits everyone in Oregon. And I would say with a really good oversight of the Energy Trust in Oregon and the oversight of the Oregon Department of Energy, we do wonderful, I think, quality installs here in Oregon. We probably have the best installation performance that you'd see probably anywhere in the country. So that's another reason I think it would be good. And lastly, the tax credit. My customers are all tax-paying Oregonians, and they're putting a lot personally of their own finances and investments in order to make this infrastructure improvement so that they can have clean, renewable power. So for that reason, I urge you strongly to support the extension of the RETC. It does provide good local jobs, and that money recirculates around in our local communities. It's a great technology that provides the ability to have good renewable power for this generation and the next generation of Oregonians, too. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, good afternoon, Representative Peterson and the rest of the committee. My name is Mark Farrell. I live at 536 North Stafford Street in Portland. I urge you to support 2447 because I think it's a great bill. The RETC is a great vehicle to integrate solar energy and renewable energy into our economy. As we know, the energy mix is changing, and this has been very successful. Some examples are my wife and I purchased a PV system about 2 years ago, so we're saving about $300 a year on our utility bills, which is great. It's a permanent part of our home, so it's an asset. It adds about $12,000 to $15,000 to the home. When we sell the home, we will get that back, which is amazing. So from a financial standpoint, it makes a whole lot of sense. Not only that, but I've been involved in the industry for about 5 years now. I've been selling PV systems to our residences and also to small commercial businesses using the tax credits. And it's a very successful, very robust technology now, as we all know. Right now I'm working for Neil Kelly Company up in Portland. We also work in Bend and out of Eugene as well. So I've worked all over the state. I worked with a distributor for 2 years selling Solar World modules and other equipment for solar energy systems as far as south as Klamath Falls and Ashland, down the coast, also out to Bend and further out in the Grand, actually. So I've been all over the state, and there's a lot of support for it from what I see. So I've been involved in the industry. I have one myself. I'm also with a member of Solar Oregon, so I do a lot of outreach to people to explain to them how these systems work, why they're important for Oregonians to invest in them so that we can see the future of energy. Lastly, I'm also recently voted on the board of the Oregon Solar Energy Industry Association, OSEA, and we know as an association that it's important that we make a great business case for solar. We see solar energy equipment prices dropping rapidly. We're involved in training to make sure that folks understand how to install them effectively and efficiently. We want to make sure that we get to a point where these, as we know, and the incentives will be decreasing as years go by. That's why we have them to begin with. That's why the cost is constantly going down, as we're seeing a huge increase in the installation. So again, the RETC is a wonderful vehicle. I've taken advantage of it personally. I know a lot of other people have too. So I wish you that you would support the bill. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jeff Bissonnette, representing the Citizens Utility Board of Oregon, representing residential ratepayers. And I'm here, too, to encourage you to pass House Bill 2447 and extend the sunset. My remarks really sort of pursue the point that Representative Reardon made just a bit ago, that this tax credit really works well kind of with the incentives that are present on the ratepayer side. For ratepayers, we try and incent these systems for benefits to the system and for the energy benefits. But those incentives don't capture kind of things that have a broader state purpose. It really is for the benefit of the energy system and the energy benefits. It does not capture things that the residential energy tax credit can capture, like economic development and that sort of thing. And those are important. We can kind of capture it from the taxpayer side and the ratepayer side and bring down the costs. So extending the sunset now, sort of well ahead of the deadline, also sends a signal of certainty into the market, and that is very helpful for folks like the people who have just testified, who are running businesses and need to communicate that this is a program that's going to be out there for the long term, and that helps build confidence in the market as well amongst consumers. So for those reasons, I do encourage you to extend the sunset and pass House Bill 2447. Thanks.
Questions for this panel? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jeff, what conversations has CUB had, if any, about the impacts of net metering on ratepayers in general? Mm-hmm. As we talk about, there are those who can afford to participate in the PV program and stuff, they experience the benefits, but yet there's still that cost basis for the utility that is, I think, some people would say, obviously shifted to other ratepayers who aren't able to participate in that, and their rates could and probably are inching up incrementally and so forth. So it's a bit of a shift from one base to another base. Have you had conversations about that and any kind of concerns or recommendations about net metering going forward?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, we have had conversations, and where we're at right now is that it's a theoretical issue, but not one that is causing a massive subsidy or a massive sort of transfer wealth. And one of the things that I bring up a fair amount is using myself as a case model. I do have solar panels on my house, and you know what I've offered to the utilities is let's explore. You know, if I'm being subsidized, by whom and by how much? And did the subsidy start when I put solar panels on my house, or when I switched my mediocre efficiency water heater to a high efficiency gas water heater? Because at the end of the day, to the utility, whether I put solar panels on, switch out my water heater, or do a lot of efficiency, it looks the same. And you know, we haven't raised the issue about subsidies and that sort of thing in regard to conservation, and we've done a lot of conservation over the years. So, you know, is it an issue that we'll eventually need to deal with? Yes, and you know, over the next decade, we should figure it out, because then we may be having solar penetration at the levels that we'll have to worry about it. Until then, we should look at the dynamics and start to look at the values and the actual money involved, and keep talking about it. But it's not an issue that we need to hold up this policy for.
Representative Benson.
Sure. And Jeff, as long as we have you up there, the measure of efficiency, where does it fit into your analysis and your organization? In other words, all of these things that we're talking about paying for here today ostensibly bring us less expensive power or less CO2 or something. What's the measure that we should be applying up here to why we should continue this program? What's the greatest benefit? We've heard about jobs. Yeah. And we've heard about businesses that relied upon these things we've created. But isn't at its heart the idea to drive down the total use of power? Isn't that what, when I say efficiency, that's what I'm thinking. Is that what we're supposed to be trying to get at with these devices?
Madam Chair, Representative Benz, I think sort of the glibest answer is yes. And it's all of the above. And I think what I alluded to before is sort of the different interests that we have. And people who hang around me long enough know my analogy of, different pockets in the same pair of pants. We have money coming out of our taxpayer pocket to do certain things, and I think here that issue is about economic development, is about jobs, is about supporting industries that the cost of renewables are coming down, but it's they're still not quite at market rates, and so that is something that this committee, I think, should be dealing with. On their ratepayer side, my ratepayer pocket and my pair of pants, that's where I'm, we're really looking at acquiring, energy at the least cost, diversifying the portfolio, making sure that we have, a number of different resource options, and that's, a reason that we support it out of the ratepayer side. And so, the answer really is all of the above. But in this context, I think you really need to look at the economics and the economic development, the job creation. And because on the utility side at this point, we don't have a comprehensive, climate policy and that sort of thing, that's another reason to look at it as well. We are trying to clean up our energy portfolio and putting state resources toward helping consumers put in cleaner sources of energy help us do that.
Thank you.
Representative Weiner.
Kind of sparked a question for me then a little bit here, Jeff. So I wonder if we should expand this into natural gas and look at ways we can get natural gas to every home in the state of Oregon as well. That would definitely reduce our use of electricity. Do you think we should consider that?
Madam Chair, Representative Widener, you certainly can look at that. I think the bigger issue is sort of what's already the role of natural gas, and there are some pretty big companies that do their very best to promote natural gas, and they do it pretty well without additional state resources. There are, some natural gas devices that are covered under tax credits, and so I think you just have to look at what the existing mix is and, what bigger bang for the buck you're getting for state resources.
That's, if I may follow up.
Follow up.
That's actually kind of why I brought up natural gas. I mean, most people who have a gas stove, they love cooking with it and everything else, and a lot of other places that I've traveled to across the country, they have natural gas in them, and it's a huge bang for the buck when you start doing water heaters, stoves, and everything like that, more than you could do with solar panels or anything else. So I think it's something probably we should look at in the committee of expanding or using with some of these credits.
Thank you so much. Next, I'm going to call up Ricky Seguin, Amanda Caballeros, and Hillary Barber.
Welcome. Chair Vega Peterson, members of the committee. My name is Ricky Seguin. I work as the lead advocate with Environment Oregon. We're a statewide citizen-based environmental advocacy organization. And I'm here today representing our over 40,000 members and supporters across the state who are excited about repowering Oregon with clean, renewable energy. And today we are here in full support of HB 2447 as one of the key steps Oregon should take in repowering the state with clean, renewable solar energy. This bill will extend Oregon's residential energy tax credit, which is huge for homeowners across the state who are looking to invest and install solar panels on their own roofs. HB 2447 also represents a pretty great consensus amongst the Solar Works for Oregon Coalition, made up of solar advocates, Oregon businesses, and Oregon homeowners. And each and every one of Environment Oregon's 40,000 members and supporters can serve to benefit from the passage of this bill, whether from installing solar panels on their own roofs or from breathing cleaner air from having less coal in Oregon's electricity mix. And also, policies and programs like this that are consistent and stable are essential to the continued growth of the rooftop solar market here in Oregon. I also want to note that with the federal residential renewable energy tax credit set to expire in 2016, continuing this program would be huge for Oregon homeowners, and it's good to get to it early instead of when the sunset is very near. And when it comes to clean energy, Oregon should be a leader, not a follower. If we're serious about reducing our dependence on dirty and dangerous fossil fuels, we have no choice but to look up and really tap into the power of the sun. Unfortunately, right now in Oregon, we get less than 1% of our energy from solar. We could be doing much better, and a program like this allows more Oregonians to put solar panels on their roofs and actually generate power from the sun on their own rooftop. A recent Environment America Research and Policy Center report showed that over 370,000 residential rooftops in Oregon could indeed host solar panels. So if we are actually looking to reduce our dependence on fossil fuels, this program represents another great opportunity Oregon can take and a good step toward repowering Oregon with clean solar energy. So I urge you to support HB 2447. Thanks so much for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you.
Chairperson Vega Peterson, members of the committee, my name is Amanda Caballeros. I'm a senior at Portland State University, where I study communication and marketing. I came down from Portland today to support HB 2447, and this is actually my first time in the Capitol since a field trip in the fourth grade, and my very first time testifying in front of a committee, so thank you for the opportunity. As a young person, I'm seriously concerned about the future of our planet. I've seen the implications of global warming right here in Oregon, from dangerous wildfires, rising coastlines, decreasing levels of snowfall. I have to say, it scares me. More than anything, speaking as a native Oregonian, I'm scared for the future of my state. I want to continue living in Oregon. I feel pride for my state. I feel pride in the environment. And I want to be sure that elected officials are thinking about my generation when they make decisions. Stop-and-go policies aren't helpful, and we need consistency. I'd like to be able to install solar panels on my house, and I want policies in place that make this affordable for me, my family, and my friends. Please support HB 2447, and thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, committee members, thank you for the opportunity today. I'm Hillary Barber, representing Renewable Northwest. We are a nonprofit advocacy group that is promotes the development of renewable energy resources in Oregon and throughout the Pacific Northwest, and we strongly support HB 2447, the Residential Energy Tax Credit Program extension. Solar energy is playing a growing role in helping Oregon and Oregonians achieve a clean energy future for its citizens. And as of 2013, Oregon has seen more than $1.6 billion invested in the solar industry. The total that we have is about 85 megawatts of capacity, and certainly that could be more. As we've heard from previous testimony, the solar industry contributes enormously to the local economy in terms of jobs and revenue. And echoing testimony that was offered by Jason Eisdorfer from Citizens Utility Board last week, solar energy once installed has no ongoing fuel costs, so it's a very smart hedge against volatile fossil fuel prices and potential fossil fuel price increases in the future. It's true that the costs of solar are declining. That has been well documented. Still, residential systems are very expensive for the average consumer to install. The average system for a residential customer could be north of $20,000, and that's where programs like the RETC come in. They help tremendously for residential customers to overcome those barriers and install solar systems. We strongly support the RETC coupled with other state and federal programs. This will help homeowners achieve the goals of driving a clean energy future. And I would be happy to take any questions, but we think now is the critical time to send the market signal and continue this program. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Holly, or is Hillary?
Yes.
Hillary. I appreciate all the work you guys are doing on a bunch of different things out in my part of the state. I spent a bunch of time this summer inviting folks to be guests on my radio show that had to do with climate. One of them was a gentleman named Pilkey, an author that wrote The Climate Fix. And his assertion is that all of these little programs are interesting but not necessarily effective, and that if we were serious about all of these problems, we would be doing something far grander to address the points that were just raised by a college student. We're very happy you're here, by the way. I'm going to ask you if you were given a choice of our taking the funds that we're going possibly to use with this tax credit and invest them some other way, because that's exactly what this author suggests we do, what would that be? And my more important question to you would be, what is it that you would use as the measure of the good that would come from your alternative?
Chair Vega Peterson, Representative Benz, thank you for the question. One thing I think that's important for committee members to consider is the variety of solar programs that you all will be considering this session. We're looking at a possible extension of the feed-in tariff, the community solar legislation, and incentive for industrial scale solar. And I think coupled with the RETC, we have the potential here to continue what will be an increasingly important sector of the renewable energy economy for Oregon. The RETC is the foundation of that. I can't actually, I would have to consider the hypothetical, you know, nature of the question in terms of you know, what the renewable energy industry would like to see in terms of a grander fix. But I do think that when you add the small programs together, you really do have an impact. Oregon can and should be a leader and a player, and to potentially, I think sending the market signal and extending this type of program sends the appropriate signal. I haven't read the book, and so, you know, I'm feeling a little bit.
Follow up, Madam Chair.
Follow up.
Yeah.
So here's his point. His point is that given what's happening overseas and the amount of carbon or CO2 mm-hmm. Creation that's already baked into our future by virtue of those overseas activities and ours, his point is that the solution is not to be found in the type of programs we're now talking about. That's why my questions earlier to Jeff and to others have attempted to get to the point of saying, what is it that really works? Because I think we are doing a disservice to the young people in this state and in the nation by pretending that these things are going to actually help when they're not. What we should be doing is saying to ourselves, what will work? What is it that actually fixes this to the extent that it can be fixed? I would submit that everything we've heard today is all very nice for jobs and very nice for those who've relied upon us in the past to set up their businesses, but it ain't going to fix the problem. And that is the author's assertion, that this problem is too grand, and for people to say that they're trying to fix it when they're not is a bit, I think it's a bit misleading to almost everybody. So my question to you and everybody involved in this is, truly, what is the measure of the good that we're doing with the dollars we're spending? Mm-hmm. And are they being spent in the right place? Mm-hmm. I think that's the right way to ask this question.
Okay. Well, again, I would also assert a part of the growing interest that we see in solar and in programs such as the RATC, and why consumer interest is high despite the high upfront costs. I think people are excited about being part of creating their own energy source and their own energy resources. Some people may not be in this to fix the grand climate problem, but they're contributing and being part of the solution. We're all, you know, parts of the spokes on the wheel, so to speak, to make the bicycle go around. I also think that, you know, considering it, I mean, you do pose it from kind of a global nature, and my instinct is that if we consider this from a global standpoint, that in an energy-hungry world, you know, cheap energy is going, people, the industry is going to, and other, and countries are going to be looking for sources of cheap energy. And solar is rapidly on its way to becoming that. So I think, again, programs like the RETC, even though this may be a small little program, it's part of that overall big picture. I think solar is going to be a key part of that clean energy future for the planet.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you guys so much. I'm sorry.
You have time.
Well, we have four more panels and then another bill to hear. So can you turn
real quick?
All right, Representative Widener, and then I'll get to here.
I'll just kind of piggyback on what Representative Bent said, especially since we have students and everything here. There are lots of other options out there, because solar, sometimes we get hung up on putting them on the roof, but what happens when your roof leaks? Now you have to remove all of those to get to it. It takes about 2 acres to power a house for a family of four. 2 acres, we don't have that in Portland. But if we start looking at things like, and this is something your group could look into, what New Scale Power is doing, what Oregon State's doing with some of their small reactors and everything down here, also taking thin film technology and embedding it into windows of the house so it's part of the house, things like that. Those are things that would be nice to have you start studying and looking into those for not only the global but then the small picture to give people a little bit of energy dependence themselves. So,
thank you. Representative Rudy.
You know, continue to build on the theme. I absolutely support this proposal, so that's not even a question. And I don't know that you could answer this today, but if I look at the available resources that one of the utilities has to work with today, it's, you know, to provide that power we all need and depend on, it's, you know, it's coal, it's gas, it's renewables, and it's hydro. We're not going to get any more hydro anytime soon. Right now, I think, you know, rough numbers, our coal supplies about 30% of the power in the state, and renewables are about 10%. So I have the same question everybody else does. I want to think bolder. how do we get off that coal quickly? No offense to any coal lovers out there, but how do we get off that as quickly as we can? I'd like to keep the lights on while we're doing that and build a healthier, stronger economy in the process. So maybe that's we have this over coffee, maybe you get invited back someday, but what's the roadmap for doing that? We're going to be talking about, you know, EPA 111D here pretty soon, we've got other proposals, but we've got to get more bold about this. Amanda, I share your concern. I'm going to be, it doesn't matter what we do, I'm so old, it's just, you know, but, you know, it doesn't matter. But I do have a grandson that's about 22, 23 months old. I'm kind of concerned about that. And I just don't think we're being bold enough. And we really have to challenge our assumptions on what's our energy future, not just here in Oregon, but mm-hmm. here in this country, in this world. It is a global issue, and we've got to get real about this. So,
Madam Chair, Vice Chair Rudin, happy to have that conversation with this committee.
Okay, thank you so much. Next, we're going to call up Meredith Roberts, Evan Manville, and Jerry Page.
Madam Chair, if I may, while they're coming up, Representative Reardon, when Santa Claus brought me coal every year for Christmas, I thought it was a positive thing to heat my house with.
Yeah, you know.
Did we lose somebody? No, there we go. Welcome.
Good afternoon. Joan Vega Peterson, and committee members. My name is Meredith Roberts. I'm Deputy Director for Policy and Electricity Markets and Regulatory Council for Solar City. Solar City started operations in 2006, and we have over 168,000 nationwide customers. Excuse me, I'm getting over a terrible cold. 168,000 nationwide customers and 8,000 employees across the country. Here in Oregon, we have installed over 24 megawatts of solar PV, and we have over 45 local jobs, and we operate a warehouse out of Portland. Aside from all of our installation work, we also do design, installation, maintenance, and monitoring of those systems once they're in. Additionally, we don't only do the on-the-ground work, we also do policy work, and we're here in support of HB 2447 as a strong policy lever in order to keep the solar industry strong in the state. Let's see. A 2014 Oregon PUC report found that the lack of continuity and certainty in programs in the state was a barrier to increased solar adoption across the state, and extending the RETC through 2021 is one thing that I think will ensure companies like mine the stability that we need to continue to invest and grow in the state and grow our operations. It will give customers the certainty they need in their taxes to invest in a solar PV system. And with each solar installation that goes in across the state, no matter what company does it, that grows the solar industry at large. Somebody drives past that in the field, or a neighbor decides to go solar in their neighborhood, it then kind of grows natively from that, and somebody will pick up the phone and call a local company and find a company that suits their needs and hopefully get an installation that suits their particular desires. So in short, I'm here to ask that the committee recommend passage of 2447, and I'm happy to answer any questions that I can.
Thank you.
Chair Vega Peterson, members of the committee, my name is Evan Manville. I'm the Executive Director of Solar Oregon. We are a statewide nonprofit that encourages Oregonians to choose solar energy. And we appear in support of this bill because it creates great Oregon jobs. There are 130 businesses across the state that rely on solar. About 2,700 Oregonians are employed in the solar industry. The RETC is key. We go out and we educate Oregonians about solar energy, and the financing of that decision is central to their decision, and the RETC makes it work. We know that. I see that what's going on is a partnership between homeowners and industry and the state. And if everyone does their job, we can have benefits for all. I feel that the homeowners are doing their job, that industry is doing their job. Industry is cutting costs. Solar panels are a hundredth the cost of what they were 35 years ago and about half what they were just a couple of years ago. They're really working to cut costs. The homeowners are obviously choosing to install solar, and we're hoping the state can continue to support solar because it's key to avoid what we call in the industry the solar coaster, which is this ongoing disruption among companies where they have to lay off employees and find new employees and companies go bankrupt. And that's very disrupting, and it causes all sorts of inefficiencies. So we encourage you to pass this bill. Thank you so much for your time and your service to the state.
My name is Jerry Page, and for the last 39 years, I've had a weatherization company called Total Comfort here in Salem, and we specialize in retrofit or weatherizing existing homes. So obviously, I'm here to support the passage of the RESC and the extension of that because it is very important to a lot of homeowners. And most of them, it's dollars and cents. If it's gas heated, forced air, 60 to 70% of the ducts that we look at is just blowing hot air under their house to the outside. A lot of the people in our area that we service are low and moderate income folks. There are some utility programs, especially for that income category. And what we do is we look at the house as a system, and we just tell them what they need. What is the first priority? And if they have ducts that are rusted out or laying on the ground, we know that that's their number one thing that they can do in the majority of houses. They don't have attic insulation. But anyway, we look at the whole house as a system. We strongly advocate that we do duct testing to see if they are leaky. And if they're not very leaky, don't do it. So what we do to help our customers is we bundle incentives, tax credits, and anything else that we can find to help them pay for it. The Energy Trust is very good for low and moderate income companies or homeowners, and allowing them to do on-bill financing so that they can get their homes weatherized, lower their heating bills at the same time. And oftentimes for what they've been spending for their regular utility bill, they can finance weatherization and a ductless heat pump for just about the same amount of outlay per month. So it is helping a lot of people.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Thank you so much. Next, we're going to have Paul Kearley, Werner Seaman, and Steve Oberon.
He's watching on TV out there.
So do we have Paul or Steve here?
Oh. He just intimidates everybody.
I'm supposed to be this gentleman.
Oh, come on up. And if we only have two, why don't we go ahead and have Rhett Lawrence come on up to fill the chair. Thank you. Why don't you go ahead, Aaron?
Yeah, for the record, or Chair Vega Peterson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Werner Seaman with Portland General Electric, testifying in support of HB 2447. I'll be pretty brief today. There are three things we like about this. One, it's a statewide program. It applies to all utilities equally, regardless of type of ownership. Second, as we have these policies looking at not just the solar side, but also the energy efficiency side, looking at replacing out inefficient furnaces with heat pumps or other natural gas furnaces that would be more efficient, we think that it's good to have some shared commitment between both ratepayers and taxpayers, and we like that they're both. If there are state policies that the state is promoting, that we've got both ratepayers and taxpayers putting up funds. And then finally, one of the things that I think is notable about this program in 2447 is that it has a declining or a mechanism, at least, that we're encouraged to see ODO put into it that has declined. Incentives over time, and we think that one of the things that we're concerned about is we where there are subsidies for and tax credits for programs, we don't want folks to be able to reap windfall kind of benefit from those programs, and so that component of it is something that we support. So thanks very much for your time.
Thank you. Very brief.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Jeremy Anderson. I work with WISE. We're a trade association of weatherization contractors, distributors, and manufacturers. And you have some written comments from me. I think I'll skip those so you can read them and try and take a stab at part of Representative Bent's question about what the goal of all this is. I can't speak for solar. We do conservation, energy efficiency. The goal is to transform the market. So for as an example, say 5 to 10 years ago, if you were kind of an average low to moderate or income Oregonian, chances are you heated with either cadets or baseboard heat, which is about the least efficient heating system you could come up with. You had, at that time, very few options for a better heating system. RETC has come in to push items like a ductless heat pump. A ductless heat pump can cut your heating and cooling bill by 2/3. Without RETC, it would be a niche product. It simply wouldn't have taken off as quickly. But what RETC does is it brings in new high-efficiency technologies and gives them a chance to get started. The second thing that I'd like to talk about very quickly is the 50% cost cap proposal. We're generally supportive of the idea. However, the rollout may have some problems. We've seen both through RETC and other incentive programs that an incentive set at a percentage of cost up to a dollar figure, if that number comes anywhere close to the normal market installed costs, tends to distort market prices. It's essentially setting a price point at which you maximize a tax credit. It would be far better for the department to simply annually take a look at the rules and set a dollar cap at 50% of the average cost. It would be both a cleaner, simpler mechanism, and again, would prevent price distortions in the market. Very happy to take some questions because I know that may not make sense.
I think you made sense. Thank you so much. Oh, go ahead, Rhett.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Rhett Lawrence. I'm the conservation director for the Oregon chapter of the Sierra Club. I've submitted written comments, so I won't go into much detail that there. Just wanted to echo the comments of my colleagues in support of House Bill 2447. You've heard already about the environmental and job benefits, and I just wanted to reemphasize the aspect that Hillary Barber mentioned, that Oregon Sierra Club has been offering a Go Solar program since 2011. And, you know, even as the cost of insulation have gone down dramatically, as we've heard, you know, it really is the case that for most average households, the costs are still, you know, make it out of reach for those households. And so, you know, the RETC is a critical component of making the average household able to install these facilities at their home. So with that, you know, just wanted to again strongly encourage you to support House Bill 2447 and be happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel? Representative Reardon.
Scared. Nobody has mentioned the average payback time on one of these after you received all the various incentives and so forth. Is there a typical cost time it takes to recover your cost?
Chair Vega Peterson, Vice Chair Reardon. Yeah, that's actually a pretty interesting question. I think that one of the things we look at in terms of a definition of cost-effective for energy efficiency as to the best of my recollection, having looked at this the last couple months, is that for energy efficiency measures, generally we determine cost-effectiveness in statute. I believe the reference is that if an energy efficiency measure pays off within 10 years. So for PGE, we plan for attaining all cost-effective energy efficiency, meaning a 10-year payback. I think one of the questions for, and this was kind of the impetus behind our support and why I think it's it's particularly intriguing the declining incentive over time on some of these programs is that we've heard for some rooftop solar installations in particular that some of the paybacks can be 4 years or in some cases 2 years. I guess one of the questions that I think is worth folks asking is at what point is that, or what should the payback be? I mean, if energy efficiency measure pays back in 10 years and you could pay off a rooftop system in 3 or 4, is that the right balance? And I think that's a question that policymakers should be asking is, what's the appropriate level? I think it'd be interesting as we go through rulemaking, assuming this goes forward, how ODA would evaluate that.
I think we need to evaluate that. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We are going to have, looks like one more group. Jerry Page was already up here, so I think he filled up twice. Gary Bauer and Meredith Shield. Might just be you.
Special. Thank you, Chair Vega Peterson, members of the committee. Gary Bauer with Northwest Natural. I'm going to be very brief. Just our policy has been to encourage the use of our product where it makes sense for our customers. And we think the Oregon's tax credit programs are an important part of both the states and our efforts to encourage overall energy efficiency efforts, whether those are actually shell measures or their equipment measures. The incentives do motivate customers to make better choices about high efficiency equipment and certainly lead to energy conservation and market transformation. And we urge your support of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Mm-hmm. Representative Wyden.
We may as well ask him, would you like to be included in this?
Chair Vega Peterson, Representative Widener, natural gas equipment is included. If you're referring to actually extending pipes and out to serve communities, I'm not sure it fits in this bill. In fact, I know the Department of Energy probably would not want me to put it in this bill. So, but we'd be happy to talk about ways to extend natural gas service to customers.
Representative Boone.
I can't let this go by. Thank you. Would you bring it out to my house along with high-speed internet then, please?
Chair Vega Peterson, Representative Boone, be happy to talk to you about that.
That'd make me really happy.
Thank you so much. You. Anybody else here to testify?
I do. I propane.
Joe, come on up.
Good afternoon, Chair Peterson, members of the committee. My name is Joe Esmond. My business address is 15937 Northeast Airport Way, Portland, Oregon. I'm a business agent for the IBW 48, where we have a 72 kW solar array, 10 charging stations, and we just redid everything in LEDs. Our organization across the state has probably trained over 3,000 electricians, apprentices and electricians, and solar. We view solar as another arm of our industry. Basically, my mantra is if it has electrons going through there, we want to be involved. So that's what we do. We do the intels, we do the windmills, server farms, which is a very hot topic these days. So we are generally supportive of this, have been. And full disclosure, I'm on the board of Drive Oregon again. Charging stations, electrons. My only concern, and this is not sure, and they're not pointing any fingers. I think there's a problem with people who have the right licenses to perform this work. The contractor may have the license, he or she may have the license. That doesn't mean that the workforce up on the roof have the right license. There's an LRT license to do that work for everything under 25 kW, basically 12, 13 panels. 25-year electrician, maybe two times on the job I've been asked for my license. It isn't something that happens. There's always people have inspectors inspect, but they do they have the time to go? Maybe on a small job, but been on jobs with a couple hundred people. So anyway, I would like some mechanism, and I've talked to Mark Long, the head of BCD, and about if we're taxpayers are paying money for tax credits, they should make sure the work is being done right to get the value is what they're paying for. This is it's not a huge problem. It's maybe anecdotal, though there is one contractor on a, you know, that's very important to the IBW. It's just, and it also should be important to the homeowner, and it should also should be important to the utilities who have a lot of times it's their customers. So I will be introducing an amendment, friendly amendment. Just had this brilliant idea at 6:30 this morning over my coffee and said, oh, shoot, I better get in there. So I've contacted some people in this room and other people. So there we go. And, you know, it's great to have the credits and everything else. I'd like to see the workers have a pension of some sort and health care of some sort. But we don't get everything at once. So thank you for your time. I'll take any questions.
Okay. Any questions? We look forward to the amendment, Joe.
Thank you very much.
All right. I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on 2447 and open a public hearing on 2448. So we'll have Anthony, if you would come back up, please. Welcome. Please go ahead.
Chair Vegas Peterson, Vice Chair Johnson, Vice Chair Reardon, members of the committee, again, for the record, my name is Anthony Buckley, and I'm the Chief Financial Officer for the Oregon Department of Energy. I'm now appearing before you to testify on House Bill 2448. Thank you again for the opportunity to present an overview of this bill. Please note, also included in my testimony and provided to you is a chart that will be helpful in describing a process that I'll reference later on in my testimony. The Oregon Department of Energy supports House Bill 2448. This bill modifies the Energy Incentives Program by extending the sunset date for the program. The bill also provides that conservation projects with $1 million or more in eligible project costs annually recertify the tax credit to ensure greater accountability. The bill also establishes an annual recertification fee for those projects with eligible costs greater than $1 million. The Energy Incentives Program was created in 2011 to provide tax incentives and grants to businesses, organizations, nonprofits, tribes, and public bodies that undertake conservation, transportation, or renewable energy projects. Conservation and transportation projects are eligible for tax credits of up to 35% of their eligible cost. The conservation tax credit is limited to $3.5 million for each project with a total biennial cap of $28 million. Transportation projects have a biennial cap of $20 million. Under the transportation offering, transit service providers are eligible to receive a tax credit for up to 10% of eligible costs. As of January 1st, 2016, tax credits for transit services will no longer be available. Grants for renewable energy projects are limited to 35% of eligible project costs, but no more than $250,000 for each project with a total biennial cap of $3 million. Projects receiving a tax credit or grant must operate as represented in their application materials and remain in operation for at least 5 years. Since the Energy Incentives Program began accepting applications in 2012, the department has received over 1,000 applications. About 200 of those applications have been denied or they've expired, and there are currently over 800 active and complete projects throughout in the program. House Bill 2448 modifies the Energy Incentives Program by extending the program sunset and provides that conservation projects with $1 million or more in project costs annually recertify the tax credits I've stated earlier. Extending the sunset would provide incentives for investing in energy conservation, renewable energy resources, and cleaner transportation fuels for an additional 4 years. The sunset extension would have a positive ripple effect for those contractors and other businesses selling, installing, or offering services related to these energy projects. Additionally, other utility incentive programs would continue to be able to leverage the tax credit and grants with their own incentives. Please note, as mentioned earlier, tax credits for transit service sunset January 1, 2016 and are not proposed to be extended under this bill. To ensure greater tax credit accountability for larger projects, House Bill 2448 authorizes the department to tie the use of conservation tax credits to a performance agreement and create a process for annually recertifying tax credits with eligible project cost of at least $1 million or more. The bill would authorize the use of a performance agreement as part of the final certification process. Performance agreements may contain project requirements for operation, energy savings, and standard language relating to processes, timeframes, and failures of performance. The bill also provides that the department may withhold the tax credit for a conservation project with eligible cost of at least $1 million. The department would then require a project owner to recertify the tax credit each year for 3 years after the final certification is received to complete the tax credit. The chart I referenced in my opening is the chart I refer to now that walks you through what that recertification process would look like. Let me give you a brief overview and see if I can do a fairly good job of trying to walk you through that chart. Upon receiving a final certification, the project owner would receive a one-year tax credit equal to 10% of the eligible cost. After the first year of operation, project owner would submit a recertification application to receive, upon approval, another one-year tax credit equal to 10% of the eligible cost. After the second year of operation, the project owner would submit yet another recertification application and, upon approval, receive a one-year tax credit equal to 5% of the eligible cost to use or transfer. Excuse me. After the third year of operation, the project owner could submit a recertification application and, upon approval, receive 2 one-year tax credits, each equal to 5% of the eligible cost to use or transfer. The combined total tax credits would equal up to 35% of the eligible project cost. If a project owner is unable to recertify the tax credit, the project owner would lose that year's portion of the tax credit. The project owner may come back the following year and recertify the remaining tax credit portions if the project is able to meet the operating requirements. The attached chart again describes the proposed process to recertify the credit. The data collected during recertification would be used for reporting, ensuring project operation, and developing future incentive requirements. The statutory mechanism to revoke and recover a tax credit can be complex. As proposed in House Bill 2448, a method in which the tax credit is withheld annually until a project provides actual performance and operational data would ensure greater tax credit accountability for larger projects. The Energy Incentives Program is funded through fees for initial applications, technical reviews, and final reviews. House Bill 2448 would allow the department to collect a $500 fee for each recertification application. In summary, House Bill 2448 extends the program sunset to January 1st, 2022 for conservation, alternative fuel vehicle transportation, and renewable energy development programs. The bill also allows the department to require conservation projects with eligible costs of at least $1 million to annually recertify the tax credit to ensure greater tax credit accountability for large projects. The Oregon Department asks for your support of House Bill 2448. Thank you.
Representative Boone.
Thank you. And sort of sounds like a Betsy, and I wish we could just get over the problems that we had with the Betsy, start over, and give some of these larger projects some incentives to go forward, because they're out there. There's new devices and wave and tidal and onshore stuff, too. And it's, I'm all for the RETSI and the residential and the smaller personal projects. But I think if we're really serious about moving into renewable energy sources and going through this again, you know, like that, and I know that there are people out there ready to go on it, but they're worried about the process we go by here every 2 years. We review stuff, and so they're not sure if they're going to get something now or later, how to plan for their money, because it's a lot of money putting into these. So I was trying to follow along and take notes with what you were saying, but maybe we could get that in writing. What's your testimony? If
No, it is. It's on a list.
Is it on a list?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was trying to get it on this, and it was just impossible. Yeah. But anyway, I guess my point is that, and I think Gary Bauer made some comment about it, too, and some people were talking about bigger, thinking bigger and more globally. I guess it was Bence that
talked.
Yeah.
Big district.
Yeah, big district and all that. And that's true. He has 19 million acres. He should be able to put more than a few hundred acres of solar panels on his. If you look in, and I will open this again, every year I sit on this committee, I open this offer. I have every recharge news back to when I first started getting it 10 years ago. And I actually just saved the magazine ones now because they're prettier and they have better pictures. And it's all renewables all the time, and anybody's welcome to come and take one from my office if you like. But it talks about what's going on around the world, and I get it online. I'm sorry I can't share the login stuff because it's kind of spendy and they don't let you do that. But so please look at that, and please, for the department too, you know, that's where we're headed, and I get that, and I know it's expensive and all that, but it's really worth taking some of this risk, because we will be farther ahead if we think globally than, not that we shouldn't think locally, but Oregon is really doing great right now, and I just think we need to expand our view. Thank you for indulging me.
If I might, for the record, Michael Kaplan, Oregon Department of Energy Director, Chair Vega Peterson, Representative Boone. I think our approach to the points that you make is that we have to learn to walk before we run. The department very much has to, in our view, establish good, sound controls and implementation of the tax credit programs that we do have, and give the legislature the confidence to have that kind of debate and make those kinds of decisions for the future of the state and quite frankly, the Department of Energy. I think that we learned from our past administration of those programs that we have to be able to intentionally and effectively manage the tax credits that we give out, even the very small ones, all the way up to the modest ones, and then ensure that there's confidence in how we begin to take on the responsibility, again, of handling those larger investments that there is some interest in making throughout the state. So I think we certainly share your concerns. We think that's a conversation we'd very much like to be engaged in the future.
And just keeping in mind, you guys are young, I'm old, and so I'm maybe in a more of a hurry to get this done. So.
Yeah. Chair Vega Peterson, Representative Boone, I won't take that bait at all if you'll.
Representative Weiner.
I will make this very quick, and you can give it to me offline if you don't have it. But when you're looking at these projects, how much does price per kilowatt come into play when they're doing or putting these projects together? Do you take that into account to see if it's going to pencil out after the project's done? Because some of these projects are relying on the credit, and then at the end of that, you know, right now you have natural gas prices that are real low. Does it pencil out for some of them to keep running after the credits go away? And do you take that into consideration when you're doing these projects?
Chair Vega Peterson, Representative Widener, we can get that specific, or we can work on seeing if we can pull together that specific data point. I do think that what we're trying to do here and what we learned at the tail end of the business energy tax credit is that we do want to have tax credits that are based on performance expectations that we both agree to, that the department and the recipient of the tax credit make. We would expect that that agreement be honored throughout the life of the tax credit they're receiving. Whether it's tied directly to price per kilowatt hour, I think we'd have to go back and revisit, or I could turn that part over to Anthony if you want to take a shot.
Chair Vega Peterson, Representative Widener, tagging on to what Director Kaplan said, it is a consideration, and many times the incentive is provided to adopt a project that further reduce costs or take advantage of reduced costs. One of the things that I would tell you from my experience in this program is we build really good relationships with those who have received tax credits, especially on the larger project size. And in my experience in recent history, we've had project owners who are contemplating that very question that you raised. Natural gas is cheaper. I want to switch. I put in this biomass boiler system years ago. I want to switch it to the natural gas. What happens if I take the biomass offline? We actually have our applicants come back to us before the tax credit is exhausted to have those conversations. And many times they're willing to give up the credit. So it's a conscious decision, and it's an ongoing conversation subject to the project.
Quick follow-up, because I think that's something that's important. You don't need to comment on this, but we make sure we have the ratepayers or the consumers in mind when we're doing a lot of these things, because a lot of these projects hurt the consumer at the end, after we've done some of them, and I just want to make sure that you're always focused on that, because our job here is to make sure we have inexpensive power for our constituents in our district. So
thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So we just have a couple people to sign up. I'm going to call Jeremy Anderson, Jerry Page, and Paul Kearley. And committee, we're going to go a couple minutes over. So I will. Yeah. We'll
keep it waiting.
Yeah.
I get time and a half.
Yeah. Welcome back. Since we're on a new bill, please go ahead and reintroduce yourself for the record on this bill.
Good afternoon yet again. My name is Jeremy Anderson with WISE, still representing the weatherization industry. Mostly here yet again to remind everybody that these bills are not just for renewables, but also for conservation. And in fact, typically speaking, conservation comes in somewhere around a third of the cost of renewables, and there is plenty of it out there to get. Specifically on this particular tax credit, we use the small premium project portion for the most part to go after the worst of the worst of residential housing. So these are the just egregious energy wasters out there, which are mostly rental properties. And without this particular credit, rental properties do not get weatherized. There's not a whole lot more to say than that.
My name is Paul Kearley, and can I follow up on this shot against rental properties? I'm a landlord here in town. I have, excuse me, I have about 1,000 rental units, and most of them are low-income rental units. And my specialty is to buy rough properties and fix them up and hold them for the long term. So I buy low-income stuff, I fix it up, I rehab it. So your energy incentives are critical to me and my business plan to fix these properties up. But what you don't appreciate is I'm a landlord, but I don't pay for the utilities here. The tenants pay for these utilities. And so as I fix these properties up, if I'm putting a lot of money into this property, the energy, the weatherization component of it gets sometimes, if I can't afford it, I don't do it. Now, I've heard a lot of conversation here about tax credits, and I respect that, and it works. But you can't believe this, it doesn't work for me. I know this is a little hard to take. I have these 1,000 units, but I don't pay any income tax. So a tax credit for me doesn't work. So you have a simple answer to that. You have the pass-through program. But here again, the pass-through program doesn't work either, because somehow the rates are so askewed that when they sell these credits on the open market, people aren't buying them. So for me, I've heard a lot of wonderful talk here this afternoon, and it's true and it works, because in the olden days when I would do 1,000 windows at a time with you guys, it worked just perfectly. But somehow the pass-through portion isn't working now, and I think it's the exchange rates. If we could give a better price to investors to make all this work. Anyway, the point is, if you could help the rate on the pass-through portion of this, you can not only help investors, but you'd help renters, who people don't seem to think about or talk about. It'd have a big impact in the economy, especially for somebody like me who would use a lot of it if I could. Thank you.
Thank you. And to appreciate, we've talked a lot about the problem of how you actually address the issue that you do as part of your business, is how do you incent building owners who don't necessarily pay utility bills to have to do some of these energy conservation efficiency programs. So we appreciate you being here.
Once again, Jerry Page, Total Comfort Weatherization. So what Paul's talking about is what we commonly call a pass-through option. So just a couple of things. It is very critical. We wouldn't do squat for landlords if it wasn't for this. But I want to just enlighten you a little bit. Most people think of landlords like Paul Kearley that take advantage of these programs. And there are more people that are own one or two rentals. There is a lot of nonprofit like Salem Kaiser Community Services, I think. Anyway, they're nonprofits. They don't pay taxes to begin with. And so it applies to a lot more people than just large landholders. So what we're seeing is that there's some rules from the Department of Energy that if you have, a $1,000 tax credit, they want you to sell that to somebody for 45 bucks. And the accountants that we've talked to won't even tell their, they won't even mention it to their clients because it'll take them $100 to explain it worth, $100 worth of their time. So it's kind of a dead on arrival or even before it arrives. So we've had that problem, and I just want to make you aware of it. I look forward to working with Director Kaplan and this committee to address that. It doesn't need legislation, but it sure needs some communication, and that's what I'd like to accomplish in the very near future.
Thank you. Representative Boone.
Thank you. I just want to alert you. You don't need to assume that we don't know what you're talking about or we're talking about. At least two of us up here are contractors.
Good. Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you so much. I'm going to ask Jeff Bissonette, and I think Mary Mann and Jody Weiser to come up.
Jeff should just sit up here.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Again, Jeff Bissonette, representing the Citizens Utility Board. Just a very quick note in favor of House Bill 2448. Everything I said about renewables in my last testimony switched to conservation, and we can move on. I will take just a minute to say one thing I should have said in the past, in my past testimony, is that for both the programs that these bills represent, back, I think, two sessions ago, we made significant changes in the way ODO could kind of interact with these programs and make adjustments. It wasn't just kind of you made it in statute and just let it roll. It was a new role for a state agency, and I have to say they've performed that role very well. And as the director said, they were learning to walk, and they're walking pretty well. And to go after some of Representative Boone's statement, hopefully we can have a conversation soon about at least walking quickly, if not running. So I just wanted to mention that the department's done a good job in learning those new skills that the legislature and, frankly, the community asked them to play. And again, urge you to extend the sunset as represented in House Bill 2448.
Thank you. Mary?
Good afternoon, Madam Chairperson and representatives. My name is Mary Mann. I'm a general contractor. July 1st will be my 35th year in this business, helping homeowners weatherize and remodel their properties. I'm also an Energy Trust trade ally. I'm a property owner. I'm a three-time elected public official and city councilor for the city of River Grove. I own rental property. I looked at my electrical bill for $78. I have a home business, and $148 gas bill in a completely remodeled 2,400 square foot home that I've owned for 20 some years. I can tell you how many rental properties there are out there that are built in the 70s where somebody is spending $200 to $250 a month on a 600 to 800 square foot home. Now, you put that in perspective. In the last 5, 6, 7 years with the recession, we're certainly seeing a huge number of people living on one income. Households that are combining households, you talk to the property management companies, you're seeing rental properties where people used to be a renter by themselves. Now they have roommates. They can't afford to live in these nice places, or they upgrade to a nicer place, but they have four roommates in a house. These programs are so critical, and the tax credit, which I'm here to support, the renewal of, no pun intended, to get this sunset, off into the next generation of tax credit time, is so important because it's also married to some of these other programs, which other contractors and representatives have mentioned here today. What I've seen is an awful lot of resistance to property owners, because primarily my business, and I've helped rental properties owners get millions of dollars of these tax credits. It's harder and harder to get them to do it because the incentives are shrinking. And the incentive is because they can get all the rent they want. They have very low occupancy right now. I mean, they have high occupancy, low vacancy. They can get what they want for them. And sometimes what I'm hearing is, why should I weatherize and do these important things for my tenants when they'll pay whatever I charge them? So as a contractor and as an ethical person, and we're trying to do energy conservation, it's a bigger job to get people to move along and do these programs. I was one of two contractors, the other one sitting in this room today, that managed to successfully get through the competitive process for the new program that came out in 2012. Mine was a little over $500,000 worth of work. Last year, I submitted one project for $70,000 worth of work, and now I refuse to participate. I've refused to tell my consumers and owners about it. It takes 8-9 months to get it through the Department of Energy. It's very difficult. I have to become a technical analyst to do it. It's just not in the marketplace to have. So our clients are going through small programs. It's harming the program, getting weatherization in state for multifamily. Each one of those people that pay electrical bill pays 3% to the public utility commissioner to encourage weatherization programs, and they can't take advantage of it. So it's kind of a form of stealing from the very people that should be being a beneficiary of this. So yes, I totally support the tax credits. I think there's improvements that can be done to the program. And with the wealth differentiation that we're seeing in America today, Oregon isn't any different. The wealthier are getting wealthier, the poor are getting poorer, and we're seeing a higher need for subsidized housing, which we all have to pay for. And when somebody can save $50, $60 a month on their utility bills, it all comes back into the economy. We have healthier children, less need for subsidized housing and subsidized fuel allowances. That's it. Thank you. And I don't have an opinion at all.
For the record, I'm Jody Weiss with Taxpayers Oregon. I like these programs. I'm concerned about one thing. In 2009, we set up a schedule for when we were supposed to review tax credits, and these tax credits are not on schedule for this year's review. So the Legislative Revenue Office did not look at them and do any review, and none of the people who might do the kind of substantive of review that says, is this really accomplishing stuff, haven't paid attention, because they're not on the schedule for review until next time around. And it also means that they would be competing. The co-chair's budget has assigned $14 million to tax credits. If they simply extend the tax credits that are up for review this year, and they are mostly things that are good for families, like child care, health care, disabled benefits, if you just extend all of those, it would cost $64 million. So adding these energy things in is actually going to go in competition with a very different kind of program. And these weren't part of what the co-chairs were considering. And so it just seems inappropriate. There are lots of changes in these bills besides extending the tax credits. And so the bills could go forward without extensions if you just remove those parts. And it seems like it would be appropriate to not go in competition with the kind of other things that are in for review this session. Thanks.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel? Mm-hmm. As with all the tax credits, it does have a substantive referral to the Revenue Committee, so we'll be talking about it more
right. To
move through. But I understand it wasn't part of the work that Chris put together in his tax credit report. All right. Thank you so much. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on 2448 and end the hearing for the House Energy and Environment Committee. So we are adjourned. Thank you.